Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in, folks. This is Carl Nordgren. This is episode number 57 of Exploring Your Creative Genius. I hope you've been enjoying the shows. What I promise you all is that I'm going to offer many different perspectives on the topic of being creative, on being entrepreneurial. The introduction talks about an expansive view because I want you to come up with your own understanding of what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial, an understanding that has your situational intelligence organizing your understanding of what it means to be creative. You know you're not creative today the way you're going to need to be next week on a different kind of project. So I want you to have multiple understandings. One of the best ways to accomplish that is to bring in guests. And I'm really excited about our guest today, Sean Meyer, somebody I've just met fairly recently. We've just known each other for a couple of weeks. But over a coffee table a week or so ago, I listened to Sean talk about some of his stories, about some of his experiences, and I thought, oh, for sure, we need to make sure that more people get to hear what Sean is up to. He's currently the chief operating officer of Windlift, a very innovative wind energy company. He has years of experience before that in Napa, not helping the grapes grow, but helping the vineyards grow, helping the companies grow. So I'd like to introduce you to Sean Meyer. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. Add to that introduction that I just gave to you. What else should folks know about you and your background?
Well, first of all, Carl, thanks so much for having me. It's kind of fun being a new North Carolinian. Was just overwhelmed by the hospitality and welcome by you and looking forward to chatting with you today. But you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Spent a fair amount of time working my way through luxury food and beverage, various stages of Michelin-starred restaurants and wineries before taking on a consulting practice where I was helping people build businesses. Fast forward to now, you know, was really looking for a change. Wanted to do something with a bit more social impact. Started looking at renewables. An opportunity presented itself at 49 and decided to completely hang up everything that I had been doing and take on a new adventure, and it's been great.
Well, new adventure, new location. You were out in Northern California, and so, yes, you are a new North Carolinian.
I am indeed, yeah. Being from Minnesota originally, this feels more like that than California did. California never really felt entirely like home. This place feels very familiar.
Well, I love the state. We've been here for 40 plus years, and boy, I just love North Carolina. I remember you talking when we were at that sitting across the table from each other. I remember you talking about some really fun, innovative educational experiences you had. I think maybe they were in Minnesota, where you had the opportunity to go to, this is my language, an alternative school. You might want to call it something else for the folks. Tell us about that experience where you did some amazing things.
Yeah, I was in the public school system, and my mother recognized that I needed a change. So she enrolled me in a small school called the Blake School. I went there for part of middle school and high school. And I think that was really one of the first places that, I felt like I could explore the educational space around me, if you will. I really, really felt like people were there to encourage my personal growth, whatever that was. So strange for a high school, you know, I had the opportunity to take a semester of Russian language, which always taking a language is a great way to think the way someone else does, right? You have to absorb a language, but you have to absorb sort of thought patterns.
Perspectives.
Yeah. Right. The fact that Russian doesn't have any articles, right? You don't say the thing, right? You know, it's just an interesting way of thinking. And then moving forward from that, the opportunity to sort of dive into Spanish literature in the native tongue, my senior science class gave me the opportunity to step outside of class and clone carrot plants on my own and write a lab report about it. These experiences really, I think, were vital in more than shaping me, I think providing me with the confidence to really take charge of my learning when I hit college and university and then was able to carry those forward into adulthood.
So you were able to experience – I think we make a mistake so very frequently in education that we think that students should be consuming their education when in fact they should be constructing their education. And that sounds like that's exactly what you were doing there at the Blake School.
Or in my case, consumed by it. Right. So, you know, overwhelmed by what I was into that I couldn't help but want to explore more and dig more into it, uncover everything I could about a particular subject and fostering that natural curiosity in the world. I think it's so vital, and it's one of the things that I think that a lot of times we just lose sight of when we are looking at traditional educational systems. Is they look more at sort of like feeding information in rather than fostering sort of curiosity about
yes. And curiosity
everything.
Is so cool, so yeah. So cruel, excuse me, so key to living our successful lives in this crazy future that we're going to all be a part of, right? We need to be curious, and therefore we need to be humble so that we know that we don't know what we need to know. So let's go be curious and learn something new. And it sounds like that's your natural approach.
It is, yeah. I think it's important to foster that in yourself, right? The best way that we can understand perspectives is to be curious, even about things that we maybe don't even want to hear, don't like very much, aren't connecting with personally, but to still approach that with curiosity and interest and understand perspectives. I think that's really the only thing that you can't read, you can't pull out of a book is right. The way that someone else thinks.
Right. Well, that you cloned a carrot.
I did.
You were 16 years old, 17 years old?
I was 17.
17 years old and you cloned a carrot. Where was cloning technology at that time? Is there a national or international picture of where cloning stories were at that point in time?
Plants are easy. Okay. Animal cells are hard.
Sure.
So that's it was a pretty simple way of sort of making cells divide. It was a great project. It was super disappointing. All of the petri dishes got infected. The whole thing was a complete failure. My professor still insisted that I write the lab report in a way that we fail, we learn, we move on.
Nice. Well, that's science, right? You fail and you learn and you move on.
That's life.
That's life for sure. That's life for sure. Well, when we come back from the break, folks, I'm looking forward to hearing from Sean again about some ideas that he has about designing experiences that he developed this when he was working, I think, out in California. So come on back after the break. You're going to hear some really cool thoughts from Sean about that topic.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back, folks. In the first segment, you met Sean Meyer, a new friend of mine, so we're both meeting him. I've had a chance to hear him talk before, and I knew for sure that I wanted to share some of his ideas with you all. And so we've heard a little bit about his background. There's a part of Sean's career where he was designing experiences, helping people take on new perspectives in business. And I really got excited when I heard you talking about that, Sean, when we were together last week. I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about what that was about and what you learned from that.
I appreciate that, Carl. I think really what we dug into I think at the time we were chatting about one of your books and the things that I was kind of connecting to with it. And there was this idea of this sort of, creative genius in everybody. And it occurred to me that one of the ways that I was approaching experience design was attempting to access that. So my fundamental principle was that experiences are not something that happened to you. They're something that happened in you. And that the externalities are there to elicit a connection, elicit your imagination, to cause you to put yourself into the experience, which I think is a uniquely creative process. The idea behind making – the way that that would translate, I guess, into designing an experience is that you have to allow for space for that to happen. So if you are in stimulus receiving mode and things are coming at you and things are coming at you and things are coming at you, what you aren't doing is internalizing and trying to figure out what this means to you and how you are connecting to it. You're not accessing your imagination at all because people are engaging your brain and saying, this is the thing that you should be focusing on, and this is the thing that you should be excited about, and this is the thing that you should be interested in. And if you look at that from the point of view of, say, like a winery experience, you're telling them that they should be super interested and really connecting with the wine in their glass. And if you spend too much time talking about that, what you aren't doing is allowing them to connect with the unique vista, to be in a moment with the light reflecting off of a glass, to take in their surroundings and viscerally connect with it and allow their imagination to form this deep connection and associate positive emotions and positive thoughts with what you're putting in front of them.
Yes.
It's much more powerful than trying to convince something that what is in their glass is tasty and they should buy it. What you do is you're like, this, what you're drinking was part of a wonderful time, and every time you drink it, you're going to remember this wonderful time.
Nice.
And so that had a lot more longevity. We turned it internally as well. I had this longstanding view that employers should look at their employment as a product their employees consume, and they should be thinking about experience design in the same way and marketing the same way, and what are you doing to drive that engagement internally that you do when you face outward.
Right.
It became very successful. You know, we were able to have a lot of really, really positive outcomes, massive shifts in metrics using that kind of a approach. And you know, we would see those build year on year, right? So the same people would just stay put. It's not, this is an awesome place, this is my awesome place, right? And I think that internalization, the accessing of that creativity.
Well, when I hear you talk about it, the phrase that comes to my mind is open-endedness, and that's a phrase that I've used often in my work, right? That we want children not just playing, we want them engaged in open-ended play, right? Where they're creating the game as they are playing it. Or when I headed up a marketing services company here in Chapel Hill, FGI, when we had a new initiative, I would, sort of look at it in this fashion. So here's the mountain we want to scale. Hey, you guys figure out how we're going to scale this mountain so that they're invested in their actual efforts. And so people want to have an opportunity to fill that space, right? Mm-hmm. They're called to fill that space that you are providing them with. Another experience I had at that same agency, this was pre-digital days, when an ad would be created and the visual for the early version of the ad would just be a pencil sketch of what the visual eventually would be. And I just always wondered over the fact that I liked the pencil sketches so much more than I liked the final art, no matter how good the final art was, no matter how excellent it was. And it was often excellent. It was award-winning. But when it was unfinished, right, when it was a pencil sketch, I had to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to be more involved. It called to me in a way that a final piece doesn't call.
Sure. The unfinished work is full of possibility, right? It can go in any direction. It's one of the things I think about every time we call a building a building, right? Like it should be a built. It's done, right? But as they're going up, one of the things I enjoyed when people would bring me into these naked spaces and say, let's build a business here, and you're just looking at an empty room. And the empty room is going to be filled with things, and then it's going to be filled with staff,
right.
And then it's going to be filled with customers.
Right.
And every step of that evolution is going to transform the space.
So how did you factor in – I think it was Charlie Mingus, the jazz dude's line that says, hey, you want me to improvise? give me something to improvise off of. Right. So just a blank sheet of paper sometimes can be too daunting.
And I think that my counterpoint to that was and the way that I looked at experience design and really kind of driving the engagement was Miles Davis, who was famous, quoted Debussy in saying, "Music is in the space between the notes."
Very nice.
You have to leave the space.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Yeah. So can you quote any other jazz musician? I can't. That's the extent of mine, at least on this topic.
Yeah, no, not really. I think that's the extent of it.
Yeah. Well, that open-endedness, though, when I've had the opportunity to watch hundreds and hundreds of 4- and 5-year-old children engage in open-ended play through my wife's business. Mm-hmm. And it's this strategic nimbleness that a child learns when they're 4 or 5 years old, because they've got their notion of what they want to play, but they want to play with others, and they've got their notion as to what they want to play, and so they have to figure out how to integrate this, right, and bring this all together. It made me think of the times when partners of mine and I on various entrepreneurial startups, we'd say, boy, starting up a company is like designing, building, and learning how to fly the plane all in the same moment. And that's what open-ended play for children is, right? They design it, they learn it, and they're playing it all in the same. I don't know how to teach that, but I know how they can learn that through that wonderful open-ended experience.
That's amazing. You know, I often say that the most common trait in successful entrepreneurs is understanding that it's fruitless to de-risk the fall when you've already jumped.
That's very nice. That's a great one to end on this segment. So come on back, folks. We've got one more segment to share, you know, some more of Sean's wisdoms with you.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, and thanks for coming back. We're with Sean Meyer today. In the first segment, we talked about how important it is for young folk to be in an educational environment where they understand that they're constructing their knowledge, not consuming it. And Sean gave us some great examples of how he experienced that. In the last segment, we talked about designing experiences and leaving spaces for people to fill with their thoughts and their ideas. Boy, that's such an important creative dynamic. In this last segment, I want to hear from Sean. I want to hear about his current business, because it's in a wonderfully innovative company. Why don't you tell us about Windlift?
Sure. So with Windlift, it's all very exciting. So we're developing, in short, the most energy-dense renewable energy solution around today. We are currently operating and working on a system that will weigh about 60 pounds all in, generating about as much energy in a day as 900 pounds of solar. So really there's a lot of, I think, human impact when you talk about things like disaster relief and being able to move energy to where it's needed very, very quickly. And
so if the grid is down, you can come in with this system and, oh, wow.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, I mean, you take, for instance, looking at something like Hurricane Maria. Puerto Rico did not suffer from a lack of generators, you know, a lot of generators all over that island. The problem was that, so with hurricanes come mudslides, roads are inaccessible. You can't get fuel to the generators unless maybe you fly it in, airlift it in. Maybe diesel at that point is $100, $200 a gallon. You completely change the narrative if you're able to carry something onto a beach, press a button, and immediately start generating energy. So we do this with a tethered drone. The tether is bidirectional electrical, so energy up the tether, energy down the tether. When the wind is blowing, we push more energy down the tether than we pull up the tether. So, you know, simple explanation for a very complicated problem, you know, we have a crew of super geniuses working on it. So, you know, things have been going very well.
And so give us a sense of where you are in the evolution of the technology and in the growth of the company.
So we've just embarked on a $30 million 5-year IDIQ contract with, I guess, Operational Energy is in the Operational Energy Office of the Office of the Secretary of Defense is driving that. Our partner in this is the Naval Research Laboratory. And it's been spectacular because we get to work with their super geniuses as well. And through that collaboration can really develop much faster. So we will be in the next year finishing just a commercialized prototype. And then the following year, it's going to be a roadshow to various government agencies to see where this would have the most impact. We'll then build that thing. Meanwhile, we'll be chasing our own personal goals and dreams of getting this to sort of a utility scale and deployable offshore to solve a lot of the offshore wind industry's current issues.
And can you come up with, I mean, what's one of the issues that you all resolve?
Oh, there are multiple. Okay. So, you know, if you think about the trajectory of an offshore wind project, you sign a lease agreement years before you actually build. With as much steel and concrete that is used, what happens if the supply chain has issues or steel and concrete become more expensive? We solve this by using 90% fewer materials, so we're more supply chain independent. That also makes our solution harder to see from shore, which will take care of a lot of the people worried about their view shed.
Yep.
We don't go into the ocean floor, but with an anchor. So people who are worried about impact to seabeds and to wildlife would be very happy with us. And we're less depth sensitive, so we can go deeper, further out to make wildlife interactions less common.
Got it. That's awesome. So somebody wanted to, so the company is Windlift.
It is.
You're how old?
Well, the company was started in 2006 by our CEO in his backyard with a swing set, a hockey stick, a kiteboarding kite, and some sandbags. We've obviously come a long way since then. I would peg the modern era of this company starting in 2020 when we got our first big government contract.
Okay, wonderful. And you're here locally. You're in Durham.
Yeah, right in Durham.
We're in Durham. And you will manufacture in Durham.
That's our plan.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for coming. I'm going to guess that I'm going to be asking you to come on back and tell us more about Windlift and tell us more about how you're thinking about the world and how you're taking in your creative life. Folks, thanks so very much. This is 97.9 The Hill. As you know, the station has won again. I think it's 5 years in a row now, the North Carolina Radio Station of the Year. Isn't that wonderful? Make sure you visit chapelboro.com. They've got the best current events page in Chapel Hill. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.